Welcome guys to the dojo. In this week's episode, we speak with the Solana celebrity. He's the host of NFTs Made Easy, partner with the Nifty Portal. He is also an expert trader and creator of Bodega Buddies. Listen in as we chat with Easy. You are now listening to another episode of The Dojo, a podcast dedicated to highlighting a valued member of the Cyber Samurai community with your hosts, Sheikh, Dorian, and The Local. Each episode, we dive deep and ask hard-hitting questions about individual journeys in the crypto and NFT space, discuss current market trends, and share advice on maintaining longevity in Web3. What's up, Easy? How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, doing well. You forgot to mention I am a Cyber Samurai holder. That's tucked away in the vault with my 101 art collection, never to be listed. So big fan of what Sheikh's been cooking with that. Big fan of the team over there. You guys continue to show up every day, show out and crush. It's a lot more than most other projects. So I got to give my love and support as always.
Yo, yeah. I appreciate that, Easy. And damn it, Local, how could you forget something so important?
I said at the start there was a valued member of the Cyber Samurai community. So we highlight a valued member. So we got to double down. I could have said that you were a model for the Cyber Samurai hats and Cyber Samurai merch as well.
I wear that hat way too much. You'll see it in some interviews next week too when I'm poking around at events.
Yeah. I think I saw some your past videos on YouTube. So yeah, I think you've been rocking that Cyber Samurai hats for quite some time now, and we really appreciate that because the merch is probably one of the best in this space, in my opinion.
Bar none.
All right, let's dive into it. Obviously, we're gonna talk about yourself and your journey in Web3 and all that. So let's take a step back. So obviously, you probably said this a couple of different times already, but let's start where you can, your journey into crypto and NFT. So obviously, everyone has a different journey and their different pain points and different issues. So can you go back to where you started and how you got into NFTs?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, it started with equities on a custodial account way back when I was like 16 to 18, many a time ago. And from there, ended up just finding finance fascinating, diving into like documents, learning about all kinds of different stuff from like traditional businesses. And then I stepped into cryptocurrency and bought some Bitcoin back in the Silk Road days, bought some physical Basil with like way too much of a worth of Bitcoin now. So that was really my first kind of effort. I never really understood what it was besides like a way to buy things on the internet without people like seeing it. And that was always like cool, I guess, but I didn't really see how it could go mainstream. And I kind of stepped away from it. And then 2015-16 hit and it was like the ICO craze. I had some friends who were just actually like back in like the Discord when like Discord days in general back then were way different. Like people were just buying random shit and having open conversations from like video game lobbies. Like if you ever played Call of Duty back on the Xbox 360, that was the place you met people from all over the world. And some of them would talk about like what they were doing. And some of them were just buying crypto. And I found it interesting, took a stab at it, and ended up buying into some ICOs back in like the 16-17 run. And ended up running like 15 grand up to a little over $600,000. And then the day after Christmas, got margin called terribly. And lost everything, like quite literally every dollar to my name, because I was just dumping it in and continuing to stack leverage and run it up. Wrote off cryptocurrency as a whole shortly after that for probably 6, 7, 8 months, and didn't leave my bed for like 3 weeks after that happened. And then finally slowly got back into it. I thought I could have managed to live off of like just trading and finance in general, like personal finance, for the rest of my life. And that wasn't the case. I had to get a job. Slowly started buying back into it again in like the end of 19, started 2020. And then I got into Top Shot, December 2020. And I was one of like the first probably 1,500, 2,000 users. You used to be able to just buy packs directly without a queue, which was crazy. And I still think I have like one of the original LeBron moments on there. I'd have to go look. But we were just, one of my buddies hit me up and was like, I know you're into like collectibles in general. I'd have been flipping sneakers since before I even was 16 and ended up selling a bunch of sneakers for a car. Like I've always been like a hustle mindset where like I enjoy peer-to-peer trades, peer-to-peer exchanges, and kind of making money that way. And because of that, he knew I was always interested in that space and like cards in general. So he's like, check this out. There's these like digital basketball cards. Didn't really make a lot of sense to me, but I was like, whatever, I'll give it a shot. February hit, those things ran up. Like I'm talking 1,000x everyone's portfolio that February. And like, I would say not even a week after, it collapsed so fast. And once again, I was like, all right, NFTs are dumb. This whole thing is stupid. I'm good. Went right past the Bored Ape Mint shortly thereafter in April, May. I want to say it was April, May. Yeah, right around there. I still have a text from my friend who I got into Top Shot with. He's like, do you think we should buy these? Because we had some ETH still on some wallets. They were 0.08 at the time. I was like, no, this is dumb. And we skipped apes. Ended up buying a bunch of hash masks. So terrible trade in hindsight. Once again, I was like, screw NFTs. I'm good. August of 2021 hit, and I bought like 35 Lazy Lions. Something about it, hearing that there was money being made, I needed to dive in and ended up trading those Lazy Lions for a decent profit. And then September came, moved all of it into Solana. And that was back when I first started getting on the Nifty Alpha Morning Show, when they had a few hundred listeners. And talking to them about how we were actively talking to markets, I was going full-time into Sol from a trading perspective. They thought it was crazy. And now over a year later, almost 14 months now, almost 2 years from when I first bought an NFT, we are in a completely different world.
Yeah, I think, you know, with your story, a lot of us in NFTs, we, I myself can really relate to what you do, because, you know, I used to flip sneakers, the collectibles such as trading cards and all that stuff. And then same thing, you know, got into Top Shot and all that stuff as well. And yeah, I feel like a lot of us were kind of went through that kind of phase where 2016, 2017, got burnt and then left for a bit and then came back. I know some of those stayed around, you know, those that stayed around probably made much more money later down the track. But yeah, man, and obviously you're, you know, credit, like, gone into the Nifty portal, being a regular with the Nifty guys on the morning show, and then you started your own Solana Made Easy. So, you know, creating content for the Nifty portal, and that, is that, you know, something that, you know, you'd say kind of like catapulted to where you are today? Obviously, you know, you're creating content and then like creating your own YouTube channel now. So is that something that, you know, you'd say that got you where you are today?
100%. And to be honest with you, I never really thought I would have taken this route, which sounds kind of crazy. Like, content was honestly never really like a big interest to me. I thought it was cool, but didn't really understand that it was like its own entire vertical and medium. And like, being able to articulate things in an easy to digest manner is a value in itself. And I never really considered that. Pio would ask me in November of last year, so over a year now, if I wanted to just get on the YouTube and talk like Solana once or twice a week, talk ETH projects, just discuss the market. And I was like, you know, I'm down. Like, don't see any repercussions to doing so. Just think it would be just fun. I love the market. I love talking with like-minded individuals about it. And then continued to do so. Worked for literally free for like 3 or 4 months. Then they took me on to do some contract work for content creation. I want to say February or March. And then I actually quit my job in July and went full-time. And that was kind of like the big swing. I never thought in any day, this was never even like a career path I could have envisioned. And it just kind of happened through like just consistency and showing up every day and doing something that I genuinely enjoy and having people that found what I do interesting and my takes valuable. So it's honestly more so of like I'm grateful for everybody who values my opinion and my topics on discussion and everything else. I think the big kind of like gain to traction was January of last year. I probably had like 10K followers on Twitter, and I did a 5 Sol challenge that we ran up to like 45 Sol in like a 3 week span. And then we ran it back from 5 Sol to like 82 Sol in like another month span shortly after that. And that's where a lot of people found the value, was like, I was showing how I was trading, breaking down the trades, sharing why I enter and exit, and just being hyper transparent about it. To be honest, I kind of miss those tweets and those threads. But it's tough now because so many people watch the wallets and will like front run before I can even send off the tweet. So it became far more difficult to do. But that was always something that I just enjoyed, because it wasn't anything I wasn't doing. And those documents and the way that I actually navigated that helped me also learn by figuring out like what went wrong in trades. So if anything, it was like content creation has really become just something I enjoy and learn from a lot more myself than even like experiencing and sharing this to everybody else. And it just kind of happened through consistency, and it's going to sound crazy, but kind of just like luck, I guess. Like, I never expected to kind of get on that morning show. I was just kind of joining spaces that I found interesting, and they all just kind of fell into place.
Yeah, I think, you know, creating content and then joining spaces, I think Shake said this once, you know, spaces is like decentralized podcasts. And I feel like, you know, these spaces gives a platform for a lot of different people just to, you know, connect with each other, speak, and then obviously this can be repurposed and then, you know, turn into content such as podcasts that we do here with Cyber Samurai. But yeah, man, I think, you know, one of the things that I liked about yourself was that you kind of like, you know, gained a lot of feedback from, you know, your followers, and then you, I think you made a tweet about, you know, creating YouTube content, and then you wanted to try out short video forms and that. So with the short videos, guys, I've seen one. You did one earlier this week with we had Saigo, one of our Cyber Samurai holders here on that short video there. So how do you think that works for you? So are you going to try to go down that path more often? So I think with YouTube and Elon coming, Twitter and Elon coming along and saying that content creation is something that's going to be utilized much more here on Twitter. So is that something that you're going to try to push out more on Twitter and create more short form videos?
100%. And I think that a lot of people kind of put themselves into a box when they see social media as just one place, one location, one thing. So I think that's the bigger thing is there's a lot of opportunity for you to cross-pollinate social media channels. And I enjoy making the shorts because as a consumer myself, I like to watch content that's 5 minutes and shorter because I just have a terrible attention span. And it shows in the way I trade. I get kind of ripped for trading 1 minute candles, but it's just what I enjoy. I love the fast movement. I can't really pay attention to much longer than that. And it kind of plays into the content itself. It's why I like shorts. I've never downloaded TikTok, but I know the business has one. So we upload content there too. The only reason I haven't is because I know I would stare at that damn thing for hours because there's so many short form videos that just parabolic loop from a virality standpoint. And their algo, I guess, is insane. So I know I would get hooked. So I've done my absolute best insane, to stay away, so I know YouTube shorts are a problem for me. I'll be watching a video on YouTube, all of a sudden a short will pop up and then 4 hours go by and I'm still watching shorts. And whatever it is, just something about that quick engagement, that quick interaction resonates really well with my brain. And that's kind of why I also enjoy creating that type of content. Because I also have a thesis that if you can create content that pitches a value add or a message in a short form, then you truly understand it. So even from my own standpoint, if I can make a topic resonate and pass information in a digestible and understood manner in 30 seconds, then that means I truly understand it as well if it's getting received well.
Yeah, I think, it's something that, a lot of content creators try to obviously utilize and, become really good at, because, being able to create short-form content and then create long-form content, it's a totally different art form, right? So, long-form content, it's, you got to make sure people stay engaged and then for the long period of time, while short form content you need to try to get really concise and try to hit them with all the impacts within that short time frame. So I'll pass it over to Dorian and then we'll go over to something else as well.
Yo, Easy, I want to first of all thank you for taking time out. I know you're extremely busy, man, so appreciate you taking time to be on the stage with us today. And I just want to also shout out to you because I came back in the Solana. I got in the NFTs September last year. So Cyber Samurai is one of my first NFTs. And I've watched your content religiously. And as good as of a trader as you are, it showed me that I cannot trade as well as you. So I stopped crying because I lost a ton of money, dog. So I'm so I'm grateful for your content because it showed me the type of trader I'm not. And I just learned that, hey, I'm more of a passive trader. I like to take those mid to long term plays, and you can't hold on to anything longer than 5 minutes. Which that's absolutely good. What's up, Doc?
I was saying absolutely. Dude, you're spot on. And that's something too. I enjoy learning from people who get the conviction. Bro, I love the dojo spaces. I know you guys used to still host them. I don't know if it's weekly or bi-weekly, but you guys shared Lotus Gang when it was one or two soul. You guys shared Dust well before Dust Labs kicked off with the scholarship in Utes method. Those plays took more time to develop, and just hearing your conviction in them was something that I got crazy interested in. I'm still underwater on my bubble goose tail that I took on you guys, but hey, to each their own. But
hey, I'm underwater too, dog.
Hey, that one was Dorian. The other two were me. All right, just for the record. Bro. Just kidding.
The Lotus Gang play, man, that thing made me more than enough to be content. So I appreciate those too, because that's an area that I focus more on the immediate hit. When an announcement's made, I'm usually getting out versus playing into an announcement with other tangibles. So Dorian, I think you're spot on. It's when you start to learn what trader you are, that's how you really benefit in the market, because not every person trades the same. And I myself, I don't even rock a PFP from a project because I know that I would have to change my PFP every day. So it's just not something I do. And it's kind of just become that thing that everyone, and that's also I guess it's a benefit because a lot of people get upset with people in the space who do have people watching them and trading actively, pump and dump stuff. But I have this kind of narrative about me as a person that they know I'm selling. So if I'm talking about a project, they know I'm going to be offloading that project just as quickly as I'm talking about it. And I'm really grateful that my transparency has helped craft that too. Even to your point, you realize I don't hold anything for more than 5 minutes. And I wear it with a badge of pride, you know? Like, that's just how I trade. It's how I've traded short-term options. It's how I traded crypto in the 17-18 run-up. It was just like high volatility plays when volume would show up.
No, dude, and I want to continue on about that point. Your transparency has been excellent. So, like, I know other people get accused of pumping and dumping when they're, like, promoting a project with all intentions of selling it, but people know you're an active trader. So how can they accuse you of pumping and dumping when, dog, it's like, before Easy's talking about it, he's probably selling as he's talking about it. So it's like, I never fault you or, like, accuse you of, like, oh, Easy's out there promoting projects. No, people should know your type of trading style. And because they know your trading style, it's a level of transparency where they don't think you're just dumping on them. While, like, even on Rare FUD, we've had in some cases where we were talking, like, 4x4 and dust, like, months in advance. So it's like, we've already talked about our sell points. It's like, dog, I'm not dumping on you. It's like, we told you these catalysts are coming, and when these catalysts come, we're going to sell. But just because you wanted to buy at the top of this catalyst, don't accuse me of pumping and dumping.
Bro, absolutely. It's just like, when you're just hyper transparent on the way that you trade, it helps people as well. So it's like, I cannot echo that enough. And I mean, that's also why, like, I love listening into the spaces and, like, catching recordings and listening to the stuff after the fact, because it really does help me understand, like, I've now understood what the kind of plan is for those trades, knowing that if I'm buying into something that I hear about, it's a much longer timeline than even what I'm used to, like, researching and buying off of. So it just helps, like, people say do your own research into projects. There also needs to be, like, a level of doing your own research into the individuals that are actively in the market, because once again, no two people trade the same. So it does vary on that, and the information that's being passed resonates depending on that person as well.
Yeah, and the point that you made about no two people trade the same, a lot of newcomers, including myself at one point when I came into this market, thought the only way to make it in this market was actively trading. And I think that's gets a lot of people wrecked, because when they're here, like, oh, I want to be a trader, I want to make those quick plays. It's like, but those quick plays don't match up with your personality type. And I'm speaking for myself here, but I'm sure others can relate. It's like, when I found that trading wasn't my thing because I was very emotional, I was very, like, sporadic in my decision making, and I'm like, man, I'm losing a ton of money, and I came to the brink of almost being wiped out of NFTs, and I'm like, something has to change. So that's no mean to shield myself here, but I also promoted a video, like, created a video talking about learning those different trading styles, and not just thinking you have to be a short term trader.
Bro, absolutely. Like, I cannot have said it any better myself. It's like, figure out what you're comfortable with, where, like, emotion does not come into play. Because once the emotion steps in and you start chasing or thinking that when a trade goes against you, that it'll turn around because you're positive, you're right, it's usually not the case. So it's like, have some confidence in how you can best manage emotion and manage that risk reward. And also just be comfortable with, like, using funds that if this does go to zero, which we saw with the FTX situation, anything can, that you're okay with that, you know, and that will help you trade much better over a long period of time.
Agreed. I did have a question for you, Easy. I'm sure there's a lot of people in the audience too who are wanting to get in content creation or learning how to grow their brand. And I think during a bear market, it's the perfect time to do that. So what advice would you give to people in the audience who want to begin creating content or shorts on YouTube or creating threads on Twitter and just growing their Web3 brand?
Bro, so I've been watching it's going to sound wild. I've been watching a ton of content on content creation the last, like, week from people who are much bigger on, like, YouTube and stuff like that, just because my focus has been YouTube lately. And with, like, the Twitter push towards video, I think a lot of those same principles apply. And analyzing what your audience likes and playing into that goes a very far way. And the toughest part for most creators is, like, not seeing immediate results. With content creation, it's a much slower grind, especially on a net new platform where you don't have, like, on Twitter, you can actually go viral, in my opinion, much easier because you have other people in the space. You catch a retweet from the right person and you're going to get 1,000, 2,000 followers in a heartbeat. On YouTube, it's not the same. Even if you collab on stuff, it's like,
it's a grind, dog.
It's a grind. It's like a totally different beast, bro. And, like, I keep looking at my videos and, like, the shorts that do well are people just getting cooked in the crypto market. Like, people who just lose a ton of money. That's where people enjoy the content. So I'm, like, finding stories that I find interesting and then sharing those again. Like, the person who bought the Twitter NFT, losing, like, $2.5 million. People love that. People really like the anybody's pitch me your project in 30 seconds video because it's, like, 11 seconds. So, like, there's different things that you have to, like, I'm a very analytical person. There's different things you got to look at from, like, an analytics standpoint to learn. Figure out what your audience likes, Because as a content creator, it's not so much about creating content that you like if you want to grow. It's about creating content for the audience that wants to watch your stuff. So it does become harder because you're not always going to make the stuff that's like most interesting to you. But that's also the challenge of it. Like, find a way to make that content that the audience likes also fun for you to make. And there is a balance of that. You don't have to go like completely sellout type approach where you're only basing audience takes and basically playing into that. But there's like a happy medium where it's content that's enjoyable for you, but also what your audience wants to watch. Because if you're not creating stuff that the audience is engaging in and benefiting from and actually wanting to stick around and keep listening to, you're not going to grow.
Well said, man. And I wanted to point out a thing that you mentioned earlier on as well, is just like how YouTube is just like a different beast, dog. It's like you think you just jump in there and like all your audience will follow you over from Twitter. And it's like, doesn't happen that way. And it's just like you have to learn the dynamics of YouTube or any different other social media platform that you're working on and like play to those audience niches there.
100%. And that's bro, YouTube, it's like I'm learning so much and it's so different than Twitter. Cause like you can blow up on Twitter with quality threads and shit posting. On YouTube, you cannot. You know, like a volume game on YouTube won't get you there. If anything, there's like arguments to be made that volume can hurt you, which I don't fully agree with. But I think like you have to push volume out, find which of the videos are resonating better than the others, and then double down on that quality. Whereas Twitter, one day you can have crazy engagement off of shit posting. And the next day, maybe your memes just don't hit. And that's just saying like kind of the reality. Twitter is also like, it's just crazy because these social media apps are so different in themselves. Like Twitter does reward volume and tweeting at like a consistent basis and sharing consistent information. And once you put quality into that consistency, then you kind of ramp. YouTube's like, you could post once a week and have it be a banger video and that's all you need to post. Or you could post every single day and gain traction that way. But it also like the big thing is, you have to figure out what and why people are watching and staying and enjoying it.
Well said, man. Well said. And I do appreciate your love for short form content because people think creating shorts is easy. Like, oh, I wouldn't want to do long form content because I can just create this minute video. Well, trying to condense and effectively convey all that information in a minute is an extremely difficult task. And I think you tweeted out about it and I replied to you one day. It was just like, yeah, man, it's like short form just isn't my niche. And I think like I know the importance of shorts and I will like start to clip some shorts out of my long form content. But I just prefer to create long form content just because I feel like you can give a more comprehensive explanation by just a minute. And I think that just aligns with my personality type too.
100%.
Like, yeah.
100%. And that's like also finding what works for you. Like I like your mention there of like taking the longer form videos and getting shorts from those, because that'll also lead to a content loop where people watch that short form and then in the description and even in the comments, pin a comment that links them to the longer form video. And you're going to get a feedback loop and what they refer to as like a binge session where somebody finds one take interesting in the short and then goes and watches the longer form video.
Yeah, I love it, man. I think, you know, The topic of going, about content, it's really fascinating, and obviously there's like we see a lot of opportunity in crypto and NFTs for that. But just before we head over to Saigo, you know, if you guys are just joining in, this is the Dojo Spaces hosted by Cyber Samurai. We also are giving away two Cyber Samurai NFTs as well. So please, if that really mean the world to us, if you just retweet out the space, if you have any questions for Easy, just feel free to jump in the purple box down below and add some questions into there, or just hop up on stage and ask the question. But I'll pass it over to Saigo. What's up, man?
Yo, what's up? Yeah, comment, like, retweet, share the space, share the love, all that good stuff. What's up, Easy? It's good to see you in the dojo. I just got a couple minutes before I got to pop off, unfortunately, because I'm a bozo with my scheduling. But I was kind of curious what your like long-term vision for, or not long-term, but some of the goals you've set for that initial kind of transition into building out more content on YouTube. Like, do you kind of look at it as like you have X amount of goals that you want to hit, and then maybe you'll start to look at like mastering other content like platforms, or are you really kind of like just trying to master your craft and entrench yourself in say like one social media before dabbling in other, you know, forms or mediums?
Yeah, so I think it really is that cross-pollination. Like, as crazy as it sounds, I think a lot of it is being able to extend stuff and show it in different locations goes a very long way. And that's part of it too, is like when I take a short from YouTube, I share it on Twitter, and then I know the Nifty shares it on TikTok. So you get that cross-pollination aspect, But it's also like, as I'm trying to grow a YouTube channel, it's a totally different beast in itself, like trying to get subscribers and consistent views and all that other stuff. And like, since I've managed to grow a Twitter account, it's much easier to take the content from YouTube and place it on Twitter, while also still like using Twitter as my way of getting information. Like, if you'll notice, all of my shorts recently, I've been tweeting what I'm going to be posting the short on the day before and seeing how it resonates. Like, I posted the Mark, don't forget Mark Cuban got rugged, and it was like, it went decent interactions. Like, I think like 150 likes. So I was like, okay, this video should do well. And the day before that, I tweeted about how the Twitter person is down $2.5 million. And like, just said something as simple as like, don't forget this happened. And that's how, like, if people start engaging with it and getting excited about it, you can almost capitalize on the topic you're going to discuss and see what the level of interest is in anticipation of when like you actually launch it. And then it's like a bias confirmation and a content confirmation once you post a video and it does well. So I do use some form of that from like a psychological aspect to like figure out, is this video going to do well? Is it not? And kind of figure out where to set my hopes for it after that. And like, kind of go back and look what went well with this, what went poorly. And dude, like the content stuff, it's crazy. Cause like I said, like this was never really a goal of mine to get into content. It just kind of happened. And now I can't get enough of it. Like, I genuinely enjoy what I do every day. And I'm so grateful for crypto Twitter because like, it's an instant feedback loop of news constantly all day. You can find content to make other content on from any tweet on the timeline, which is nuts to think about. And that's kind of one thing I'm grateful for, like starting on Twitter and not on YouTube, is like this community on Twitter is far more engaging with me. And that helps me have open discussions and talk topics, which then lets me translate it in a way that I know an audience may be interested in.
Do you see yourself as kind of just a quick follow-up question, like as like, do you feel like you have any responsibility with kind of that content platform to help onboard new users into crypto, or do you feel like you're catering more to the existing kind of crypto like audience, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because there are days where like I'll make content about something net new, but I think it's like a little bit of a change there, I would say, because it's the thing is, when you talk about existing crypto things that are interesting and more general topics, like almost all my short form can relate to anybody. And a lot of the comments on YouTube are NFTs are dumb, crypto stupid. And like, to that extent, they still watched it, which is all I care about. Like, I'm glad you watched the whole video to just tell me that it's dumb, but thanks for giving me the view. Like, You were interested enough to stick around and then go out of your way to take time out of your day and comment on it. So clearly something hit. And that's kind of how I look at it. The thing though is too, like in this bear market, creating content right now that resonates to a wider audience lets you in the next bull run get viewed as like someone who's been around for a while, existed and has this level of, like, I don't want to call it an expertise because it's tough to really be an expert in something that's as experimental and as volatile as what we're in. But it gives you an idea that you have a past history and experience, I would say. So being able to also understand like where the market's gone, what you've seen, and have this level of education that goes beyond it, which helps like inherently build trust. Somebody goes to a page in the next bull, sees 250 videos dating back a year. You're like, oh, this person hasn't given up. Like, they clearly know what they're talking about. Even if the stuff is terrible, you know, like even if the content sucks, they've been around for a while. And like, I even do it now. I'll look at a Twitter account that's net new who responds to me, see that they've been in the space for a long period of time. And I'm almost more inclined to shoot them a follow and interact because they're not a brand new account. They've kind of paid their dues, you could say, and been to the rodeo once or twice. They've definitely gotten rugged with us all. So it's like, you've earned your stripes.
Yeah, man. I think, you know, staying consistent in this space is really key as well with creating content. And is that, you know, what other opportunities do you see specifically with content creation that, you know, can benefit of for those in crypto and NFTs? Is it, like, would you say like more educational content or more like trading content? What do you think? Yeah,
good question. I think that there's a niche for each person. Like, to be honest with you, the one thing I've like enjoyed way more than other stuff right now, and like what I think I'm going to continue to lean into, is like the real world crypto events. Like, I enjoy walking up to someone with a mic and asking a wild question and seeing their general reaction. Like, we talked to Saigo and he was dying when we were asking him some questions. Like, Pio was asking him like, how much do you pay in rent? Which is just like an outlandish question to ask somebody at an NFT event. And it was just fun, you know, like getting that personal relation and showing that we're way more than just JPEGs on the internet, I think is a big way to not just like educate that the space really is a lot more going on with it, but it also puts a sort of like emotional attachment for people to realize like, oh, this person exists. You know what I mean? Like, that's where I'm like, oh man, this is genuinely fun, you know, because people see something And they're like, okay, this person's real. Like, they are actually in the space. They have an opinion. They have a face, way more than just like the PFP on the internet. And that's kind of the vertical I enjoy the most, is like creating that real world content. But then, man, to be honest with you too, like, I just love this space in this market. So like creating anything is fun. But the education versus like enjoyment aspect of it, there's a balance for me. I like, if you listen to my spaces, there's a level of entertainment, but then we also talk about the market every day. And like combining those two things, I think, is where you find a balance, because everyone's not going to be a trader. And if it's only market talk and only trade talk, it kind of like eliminates an entire vertical. Whereas if you focus on like news, what's happening in the space, real world events, while also putting in trade talk, that's where you start to get more involvement, because now people are coming to educate on what's going on in the space from a real-time perspective. But then they also hear like, oh, this person's making money, this person's losing money, here's what they're looking to buy next, here's what they're selling. And that almost gets them interested in trying it as well, which is how, like, once somebody makes a bag, I don't think they ever leave. Even if they've lost it all, they typically double down. It's just usually what happens. And that's kind of like what I keep thinking about, is like the education and entertainment part of it all.
Yeah, I think it's finding a good balance. And I think that's what makes a really good content creator, obviously, right? You know, it's, you have to find there's a good combination of, like as you said, the different types of content that can be, you know, really engaging and also valuable at the same time. You know what I mean? So with that being said, you know, we spoke about consistency. So obviously, you know, everyone's different with their with their schedules and all that. So how do you yourself stay consistent within, say, content creation, within hosting spaces and all that stuff? So is there like how do you find that fine balance?
Yeah, dude, it's tough. But it's also like part of it comes just from like enjoying the space. You know, like right now it's because I genuinely enjoy the space that it's so tough for me to want to do anything besides this. Like, I know that the space is always moving. It's always adaptive. It's forever changing. There's always something going on. So like I find enjoyment out of that. And that's probably my biggest thing, is like, it's tough for me to not create content anymore when something brand new is happening. Like even now, like when the FTX situation broke down, the first thing I thought of was like, oh, I cannot wait to knock some stuff out about this, because it's just fun to learn. And I think that's the biggest thing, is like, I'm genuinely a lover of education and a lover of the space that it's so hard for me to ever kind of like stop. And I think that's what kind of plays into the content. But it's also finding a balance for yourself. Like, if you can't host a space every day, try to find the time that works for you to do it once a week. Then try to scale 3 times a week, 5 times a week, every day. Same with YouTube. If you're busy and you can only post once every 10 days, start. Post once every 10 days. And then scale once every 6 days, once every 5, twice a week. Things like that. Because then you start to find this balance. And as it gets easier for you to actually create, then that process becomes much easier and it becomes like a force of habit.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously bear market going on, and, you know, not many people are making these kind of like big trades right now. And, you know, content creation, and you see that with a lot of guys here, and we're trying to double down on it as well. I feel there's like a big opportunity, just as you mentioned earlier, just to, you know, stay relevant in the space, you know, become like, for those who join the space later on, they can, you know, look into the content that's been created right now and say, okay, these guys are the guys that, you know, have been following, like you should be following. You know, that being said, you know, creating content is one thing, but then you're also creating your own personal brand is another thing. So, you know, we all know yourself as, you know, Easy. You got the dog PFP there. You're part of the Nifty Portal and Nifty Alpha groups. So, you know, what kind of advice would you say, would you give to those who are thinking about, you know, creating their own personal brand behind what they do here on socials? Can you give us any tips?
For sure, man. It's like, I love that question, because it just kind of happened. Like, I became known on the morning show as the guy who traded Solana, because I was like, I'm taking a swing here when the market was like upticking in September, October, November on something that I saw potential in. And I just kept sticking to my guns and my belief and doubling down every day I showed up on why. So it's like, figure out that why. Like, what are you passionate about? I don't want to say get stuck in it, because people know I am like cross chain. I trade everything. They know me as a trader active in the space. So you want to, in my opinion, find like from a brand perspective what you enjoy, because it'll become easier to form that brand, and like find something that's like easy to relate to. I would say like the name is easy, like clearly. And even now, like when I meet people at real world events, they're like, oh, you're the dog on the internet. So it's like, that's what people know me as. Because what was interesting for me was like, there's not many dog collections, and my PFP is a dog in a Hawaiian shirt, which is funny enough, is like my actual dog in real life. So it's like, that was just something that I related to and just stuck to it. I never changed it. We've had a couple different iterations of the dog, from like a regular one to a claymated one to what we have now. And this one's you're stuck with this one forever, in my opinion. Maybe we'll add some traits to it eventually based on some events we get and things that happen when we launch Bodega Buddies. But other than that, man, it's tough to say. It's like you really got to figure out what works for you. And with that, it's also just like figuring out what people resonate with as well. Like if you're a reply guy, there's no problem with that. Just stick to it and keep doing that. And then you can also continue to grow and spread. Because I would say the biggest thing about creating a brand is like you don't want to put yourself into a box that's too small. Like you don't want to only be the guy on the internet that the only thing they say is GM, you know, and every message is just GM. Because then beyond that, you kind of lose a sense of credibility from like, oh, they're doing something that's out of their box, out of their realm. And that's kind of one thing I've benefited from is like being hyperactive as this really aggressive trader on the ground floor at all times. I get a lot of messages about like what I'm looking at because they know I'm actively trading every single day, regardless of market conditions. So some of that too, like I've reached out to everyone on this stage about like plays and what they do and knowing like strengths and weaknesses and like owning those, like be open and transparent about what you do well and basically play into that conviction as well. And slowly that brand kind of forms itself.
Yo, yeah. Easy. Great point about, sorry to cut you off, Local. I just wanted to say you made a great point about like picking your niche and like growing your brand around like your edge, essentially about what you're good at. And like, I think a lot of people didn't do enough self-reflection about this during the whole Utilis opportunity. Because one of the key things they looked at was a Twitter timeline. Twitter isn't just somewhere where you post things. It's really like your brand in Web3. I look at it as your resume. When somebody goes on your Twitter profile and they look at your tweets, if you just see a whole bunch of GMs, it's like, what value are you providing to the space? What have you done? It's like, that's like me saying, I've been in crypto since 2015. Well, okay, what did you do since 2015 to grow your brand and provide value back to the space? So it's important, like you said, if you're just a reply guy, be the best reply guy out there. So people will be like, oh yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about, even though he just replies to every other.
But even that too, bro, yeah. I love that you said that because like being a reply guy doesn't mean that you cannot provide valuable responses. And that opens up dialogue, which then when people see you as, oh, that's the reply guy, they go to your page. And if you have thoughtful like tweets and things that actually play into a larger perspective, you get out of that reply guy bubble. But that's how people initially find you. And that's how you really spread awareness and like create a brand is like getting eyes on you. And I'm like such a pro and like I'm like very pro reply guy. Even I reply to people all the time because it's just something that like it makes sense. Like Twitter's an app for engagement and socialization. You should be having more and more conversations every single day with people and respond to new people. See what their topics are, their dialogues are. Just because you responded to somebody and maybe their response back wasn't anything of value or interest or even what you wanted to have a conversation around, that doesn't mean you have to keep replying to them. You know what I mean? Like that's the other nice thing about social media apps. You can leave, you can close the app. So it's like, find the stuff that works for you and just continue to run with it with conviction. Like, and that's one thing I want to say, like smaller people that are starting a brand and an identity on the internet, don't put yourself into a box too early. Take different chances, take different tries on things and see what happens from it because it is a virality aspect. As you continue to try new things, you'll figure out what works and what doesn't work and then continue to do what works and double down on that.
Yeah, man, I love it. I think, you know, for those who are listening, like, Easy's pretty much speaking facts, man. I think, you know, a lot of us can take a lot of points from this and obviously, you know, being valuable in this space is like kind of very hard for some people, but you know, you just these little things that, you know, VZ's mentioned and Dorian as well, it just goes a long way. And I feel a lot of us can take this on board. I've done this myself as well. I think Shake's probably rugged himself right now, but he's doing this with his personal brand and, you know, trying to be fun, like, you know, create like, you know, content there, but also reply to different tweets and, you know, not only in a funny way but also like a valuable way as well. But hopefully Shay can come back. I think he's been rugged for now. But another thing on personal branding, so I get this question quite a lot with I ask this question with other people. So, you know, yourself there with the Bodega Buddies, the dog PFP, you know, a lot of people find it hard to change their PFP, but then once they find a new one, they'll change it. Do you think, you know, changing PFPs and all that stuff can affect your personal brand, or do you think that doesn't really matter, depends on what the content that you create?
So I don't think it matters based on the content that you create because people will still find you. The thing is, it's the refindability. Like when I go and see the same PFP responding to me, regardless of size of their page, you notice the same ones. And it's, once again, like a psychological aspect of it is you continue to see the same individuals and then you start to form like an emotional reaction to it. Like, there's this one guy, he responds to me every single morning on my one day at a time tweet. His name's Wallach. He's been responding to me for 9 months every single day. And no, even if I'm only like, I don't respond like, have a great day to everybody, or like even GM back, just because like some mornings are busier than others. When Wallach responds, that man gets a full sentence response every single time. Like, it's just, I don't know what happened, how it started, but his energy is unmatched. He's like, every morning is just like, easy, have a great day. It's a great day to have a Friday. I'm like, dude, you're the man. Like, you can just tell he means well. And it's something, I've like DM'd him about it. I'm like, I hope you realize, like, dude, I just love when you respond to it for some reason. And he's a smaller page. Like, I think he has a couple hundred followers. It's nothing crazy. But because he's had the same PFP, I think he's changed it once or twice, but his name's always been the same. So when I see the Wallach response, I'm like, okay, this is the guy. Like, let's go. And it's something about that. But if you're constantly changing PFPs and changing your name and doing all kinds of stuff like that, it becomes harder for people to recognize you. And that force of habit tends to get broken. So I would say, like, maybe you have a few PFPs you circle through. Like, I know Manny was listening in. Whenever I see his Tayo, I know exactly who it is. I know it's Manny. When I see his infant, I know it's Manny. He sometimes will mix in like a new collection, but he usually goes back to the Tayo. So I think that's okay too, because the net new collection, you can kind of like, I don't know if it's engagement farming, but you can get new followers because of like when PFPs are pumping, you'll get like with Lily, we saw Lilies were following Lilies, and like that's a way to like grow organically, I guess, especially in this small knit space. But I would say like there's a benefit in keeping the same PFP and only changing like iterations of it. Like we see it a lot with the Boogles. They keep their Boogle, but then they'll get like one of one art done for it. Like Decentralized has a one of one art done for his Boogle, but you still know it's him. And I think that's a good spin on it to still get like a new PFP. But it does become like a little bit harder when you're changing it every few days, because then that force of habit and that psychological play when you are responding to people and engaging is kind of broken. Like even in my DMs, if I see a PFP I recognize from the timeline, I'm way more likely to respond and even like go back to see if I made sure I responded to them after they like tweeted me a few days later.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is one that I wanted to ask myself, because I changed my PFP based on the communities I'm a part of when I'm like on Spaces and all that stuff. So I kind of like try to keep the purple background, because, you know, it kind of reflects the project I'm working
and
for.
That's
so,
a good way to do it too. Yeah. Like a center point that you keep. Like when I was putting like other PFPs in my PFP, I had the Cyber Sam in there. I had a cat in there. A few other things that I would like throw in the background, but the dog was still the focus. And I ended up just like scrapping it back to the dog. But like, that's something, if you can keep a trait or something in there that's consistent, that's a big thing. Like Fast Eddie has always had a pirate hat on all of his PFPs. And when you see Fast Eddie in the name and a pirate hat, you know it's him.
Yeah, I think, I think that's a good way to go about it. And I think, obviously that's some points I'm going to take, because now moving forward. But another thing I wanted to ask you, because this is, sorry guys, I'm going to hijack this for now. So easy, because you're creating content and you're on Spaces. So I find it, I think I saw a video with you and PO one day, and you're on a Spaces. So the hardware and the kind of like software, what kind of like devices are you using right now just for like hosting Spaces, and like whether that's be a certain mic or a certain like audio interface? I just wanted to know, because that way I want to level up my content as well. Yeah,
I use a Rodecaster Pro, which is like a podcasting deck, and that lets me plug my iPhone into it, plugs into the computer so I can stream music, and then plugs into an external mic. I have no idea what the mic brand is. The Nifty got all this stuff for me because they were tired of my headphones sounding like I was underwater. So I was like, yeah, that's fine. Like, I'll figure out how to use it all. And now it's just part of my everyday. Like, I'm at my desk, two monitors, the Rodecaster set up so I can take calls. I even like take calls through the computer on Discord, et cetera, because the Rodecaster just lets me use the external mic, and then like full soundboard. So like whenever I play music or sound effects and things like that. And it also translates into videos, so I can do all that stuff. If I'm on a live, I can play background music right from the Rodecaster. So it's kind of this all in one thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a good, I think, you know, creating content, but obviously moving forward with content, the level and quality of it really comes into play as well. And I had troubles when I connected my Rodecaster mic and then headphones to Spaces. I think, you know, I've got to get onto the Rodecaster Pro and get one of those interfaces. But I'll pass it over to Dorian. What's up, Dorian?
Yo, easy. So hold on one second. My bad. I'm doing dishes. Yeah. So appreciate you coming in here. I know we're approaching close to the hour mark, and I don't want to take up two more of your time. I'm not wrapping up the show, but I do want to see if you're going to drop us any alpha on Bodega Buddies before you get out of here, because I'm not going to let you all stays without that.
Nah, for sure, bro. So if you haven't, the allow list, we are backfilling now, so we're going to start ramping here into the new year. I'm hopeful in the next couple months, we'll have some more final dates in line. We just haven't really sprinted at the moment because right now it's not really a rush in this market. I will say the art's done, so that the biggest piece is completed. There's going to be 11 breeds. I think we have like over 200 attributes. I want to say we're going to be doing 11 one-of-ones in it as well. It'll be an 8,888 supply. The goal was to launch it for two Sol at the time, but with Sol obviously cutting in half 50%, that may be adjusted. I've been pretty hard set on two Sol. Even when it dipped down to like $40, I was pretty set on it still. Now that it's like $22, $24, it becomes a little bit more difficult. But I'm going to make sure it's still affordable. It won't be a 10 Sol mint, probably a little bit closer in line with what Boonjil and Lily minted out at. That's kind of the goal here. So hoping right around that range. In my head, it's always been $50. So that's kind of the hope. But the fun part comes after that. We're working with a couple dope organizations in the Solana ecosystem for the utility of it. I'm like hyper focused on like gamification right now. I've been reading a bunch of books on it, and I never read. Like, I'm a really bad reader. I'm a visual learner. But I sat down and finished two books completely on gamification, and like an intro one about like different game theory. And I'm on my third one now about like proper ways to master game theory. And I'm all about it. Like, I want to make this fun and engaging because I'm a huge fan of what 10KTF did with very short-term staking that's based on participation rewards. And that's kind of like how you keep the community involved. But then we've also been working with a few studios from like an entertainment standpoint to create visuals, and this whole storyline and narrative we're rolling out. Just for some people here who do participate in the portal, if you do own a Nifty portal, you're going to see a little bit of overlap and a little bit of a back and forth between the ETH PFP and the Sol PFP that plays into this much larger storyline and narrative. So I'm like, I love the story plays because like I do genuinely enjoy like the IP stuff. And honestly, like, we're here for entertainment as much as we're here for money. And as you can combine the two to keep people, like, from a content perspective, you watch good content because it's not just educational, but it's also enjoying. Like, you enjoy it. So being able to pivot that into a project is something I'm like hyper focused on. And if I can drive some game theory mixed in there too, where like you can make decisions and they have different outcomes based on your decision while keeping everyone involved, I think that's how we keep the focus on the project and don't really have to worry if it's a bear or a bull, to have people just enjoying what's going on. So I've got some insane docs I've been working on with all different kinds of like trees and stuff for like outcomes and decisions. It's been chaotic on my side, but I'm excited to start rolling it out more and more.
Yo, that sounds legit as fuck, dog. I'm getting me pumped for it.
No, I'm excited. I'm excited, man.
Still on the topic of Bodega, buddy. So obviously, you know, you started off with content creation. You know, what kind of like inspired you and drove you to want to start your own project? Obviously, you know, did you see there was a missing gap in the space or something? Or, you know, what was the inspiration?
So we've had in the Nifty Discord a channel called Bodega Trades for up to a year now, and it's been completely untoken gated, completely unlocked. Anybody could join, talk like the Solana market and what's going on. And that's always been something that like I've just liked, this curated community. We've seen people come and go. We've seen people stick around. There's some OGs in the space, and it's all been trade focused. And when you create this kind of community on it, there's like an inherent value add to just be with a bunch of like-minded individuals. And like, I've seen the space, I've seen a million iterations in the space of so many different things going on. And for me, it's like, I just want to try something new and maybe it completely flops. You know, like, there's nothing to say that this is going to be the next 1000X I want it to be. Like, the goal is to have it become the number one collection on Solana. Like, that's always the goal, regardless of sentiment. And I'm just going to try some new shit and see if it works. If it doesn't, we'll figure out some other shit to try. And I think that's like something I even put in my content is like, I just enjoy trying things and seeing what resonates and what doesn't and doubling down on what works. So I'm excited for taking the same spin on a collection. And we've seen the success of the Nifty Portals NFT. So I'm just kind of excited to continue to leverage their experience and just being on the ground floor of seeing all these projects try a million things to try my own take on it. Like, I'm not here to say that the space needs more PFP collections, but I'm hoping to see some dogs on the timeline. And I'm even more excited for like the storyline that we're painting in this this kind of world that we're building out, that I like the story. We hired a writer who's written for The Simpsons and Black-ish. So they're pretty damn good at what they do. And they've really translated well into kind of I hate the word lore. Like, I despise that word. I don't know why. Something about it bothers me. So I'd just call it a storyline. But I'm excited for the storyline take on it. And I'm excited to kind of draw out like what's going to feel like seasons where like different catalysts happen, and then it leads to the next iteration of whatever this world and storytelling is.
Yeah, I think, you know, I like that one because, you know, I kind of, you know, resonate with storytelling, and also the fact that you're trying to do like different episodes, different seasons and all that stuff. I think it's good. And also the gamification part of things, it's really exciting. But you did kind of sound like Frank back then when you said you want to try some shit, but that was pretty funny. But I don't think you'll be number one. I think the Cyber Samurai is still on our way to number one. But
that's definitely a Frank bar for sure. But he's not wrong. Like, you do have to try things and fail to figure out what works. And that's what I'm excited for. Like, dude, I'm not perfect by any means. I mess up a lot. And I own it. Like, that's the thing, is like, how do you bounce back from something like that and just try something new that's even more enjoyable? And if it's not, we'll try a third thing that's hopefully even more enjoyable. And we'll rinse and repeat until we get it right.
Yeah, love it, man. I think, you know, that's probably the best way to go about it. I think, you know, the project's ability to pivot, to understand the market, to, you know, understand what the holders want and the community wants, and just to see how you can bring value to not only the holder, but also the space in general. Can I ask, you know, when do you think Mint is going to be happening, or did you have a timeline for that as well?
So I don't have a date yet, sadly. I wish I could be like, yeah, it's going to happen this day. Originally, we wanted to launch before Vegas, and then the royalty situation happened. So we were like, all right, shit, let's wait, see what settles there. We'll figure out if we have to just hold back like 10% for an AMM pool to create that. Seems like that's getting resolved and it's in this capacity right now. But then I was also like, all right, well, shit, looks like that moved. And maybe we got to try something else and we'll see what happens. And then we were pivoting to see, maybe we launch after Lisbon and then FTX collapsed. And now we're here. So it's just kind of like, we'll see. I'm not really in a rush. The holidays take up a lot of time and focus for everybody. And maybe we do it in January. Who knows? I'm hopeful, but I'm not really in a sprint to get this out. If anything, it's just giving me more time to make sure that I'm going to be hopefully not too eager, but have a bunch of stuff tucked away that we can start firing off announcement and event wise to keep the engagement high and keep people interested over an extended period of time.
Yeah, love it, man. I think, you know, obviously you got to, you know, understand the market, you know, where this sentiment as well. And then I think, you know, being able to just hold on to that, I think obviously the market could be coming back. You never know, but, yeah, man, I think we're all excited for it. I think, you know, a lot of people here listening in are really excited for it. You've been really a pillar in the Solana ecosystem. You know, you're creating so much content for it. Love what you're doing. Moving on. So obviously we saw that. I want to get your take on this because, you know, obviously being a pillar of Solana, you saw Magic Eden announce that, you know, they're going to do things with Polygon, right? So What are your thoughts on that? Because you obviously see Polygon's getting steam, you know, with Reddit and all that stuff as well, and on Instagram and all that. What are your thoughts on the Magic versus Sol sort of conversation?
Yeah, I think each can perfectly survive, to be honest, as crazy as it sounds. Like, I think both will be totally fine in their own regard. I think Polygon's got its own sub-communities and cultures that have really gained traction and picked up speed. And I think that's the bigger thing. It's like, you look at the digital collectible subreddit and it's its own community in itself that's flourishing, has conversations and communication with everybody. And I think we're going to see the exact same thing when Sony Stars kicks off. It's a gaming achievement based thing, which is going to be triggering its own community and subculture that I expect will probably be way more focused in Discord, where gaming usually holds a tight hand and everything. But then we'll also have Nike Swoosh. We'll have Starbucks. I think the Starbucks one, your mom and your fucking grandma will be reaching out about the digital collectibles they just got by spending 75 stars after getting a macchiato every single day, you know? So like, that's completely separate. Like, if you look at eBay, those cups are selling for like 10x, you know? And I think that that's its own entire organization and subculture too, where I think they all can kind of survive. And that's what I think a lot of people forget about, is like this echo chamber we really are in, where we talk and hear a lot of the same sentiment and trends, isn't always the case. There's so many more ecosystems and groups of people out there that we really honestly overlook to an extent. And I think that's something that they're all going to start to form their own as this space develops further. And like Web3, I don't think it's only going to be on Twitter. And I don't even think we call it Web3 in 6 months to a year. I think it kind of takes its own iteration of something, you know? Like, we're already seeing the change from NFTs to digital collectibles. And like, I think blockchain gaming, if you watch the Animoca interview with Pio and Nick yesterday on the Nifty YouTube, they talked with the Animoca CEO, who said like, in 5 years, we won't call it blockchain gaming. It's just going to be gaming. And I think that's like the bigger sentiment, is like, this whole space is just going to be interested participants. Like, sneaker culture has its own culture, and like the collectors there, which like, even in this realm, it's just going to be like a digital collectibles ecosystem that has many different subcultures in it.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously I'm pretty big on, you know, let's say blockchain gaming or Web3 gaming, and I think that's probably the move going forward. I think, yeah, I agree with you there, you know, both chains can coexist, but, you know, there was a lot of talk about yesterday how, you know, some people said, oh, Magic Eden introducing Polygon would make all the Solana traders move over to Polygon because, you know. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But one thing, we didn't get through this. So what is the, you're a really good trader. And that, so can I ask you, what's the most money you've made on a single trade and what was that trade?
Oh, man. Boryoku Dragons could have been. I minted like 20 of them, which is great. I paper handed those, though, for like 20 to 30 Sol each. But at the time, Sol was just shy of 200. So that was nice. We did see those end up running up. My short on Sol that I fucking paper or fat fingered my SMB for 14 Sol instead of 141 because I wanted to double down on the conviction of it. That one was probably my best trade in recent weeks, just watching charts and trading off of that. Made a decent bag there. I'm not always comfortable talking when I'm trading like some aggressive size, and I usually trade far more size on leverage when it comes to like crypto and equities. NFT wise, though, I would say probably Boryoku Dragons. My worst loss was Balloonsville. I had like 50 of them and sold them for like 0.2, 0.3, 5 minutes before they pumped, and bought most of them from like 2.5 to 3.5 Sol. Once again, when Sol was pretty expensive. So that was a pretty ugly loss there. Made for a nice tax write off into this year. Trying to think other big wins here. You know, it varies because I typically trade like Lily was a nice print because I was buying a bunch of those from like 5 and 6 Sol and then sold most of them from like 9, 10. That was a good one. And then honestly, like I took a look at my OX flat bag and some of those secondary listings, man, are like 20, 30 Sol for things that I was buying for like 0.5. And I got a lot of OX flat. So if I ended up selling those and liquidating that, I'd probably be up there for like one of my bigger trades. But I don't know. I make a lot of trades. Oh, OK Bears is up there too. I bought 3 and sold most of them for like 100 when Sol was $100.
Love it, man. I think, you know, obviously like people there. Now, you could say, you know, people do want to copy trade you. I think that's probably a hard way. Like, you know, you're probably going to lose a lot of money doing that. You know, a lot of people have their big wins and big losses. I feel bad for you, you know, fat fingering that S&B. But yeah, man, it's very hard. So one thing, you know, big, like, what do you think is probably the biggest misconception you see with, say, beginner traders, like in NFTs?
Beginner traders, in my opinion, should look for not same day trades, but trades that make sense from, I would even say, a 3 to 5 day window. Find the why. Like, is an announcement coming up? Is that bullish? I think the scrap trade made a ton of sense. Even buying oil into that. Oil lagged. So like finding the whys and making trades into that is a big thing. And I think kind of part of that is what a lot of people should look for. Because when you're not able to like stare at your computer frequently and quite literally like put your nose into your screens at all times of the day, the scalp trading becomes much more difficult. And not usually the best way to like make profit or see gains. In this space, there's opportunity every day, and figuring out what works best for you from, I would say, a longer timeline and horizon is usually the best move, in my opinion. And taking like, I don't know if it's like being patient, but understanding that not two people trade the same. And even then, like if you have 10 Sol, take 3 Sol to actively day trade, 3 Sol to trade over a weekly span, and 3 Sol on a conviction play that you're comfortable holding for a longer period of time, and seeing what emotions you felt throughout all 3 of those ranges. And that'll help you determine what type of trader you are. Like, diversify the bag and figure out what works best for you.
There you go, guys. Obviously, you know, those are really good points. I think, you know, there's a, like in this space, right? There's a, you join the space, you kind of like, you know, trying to figure out your way, whether you're a good trader, whether, you know, you're good at creating content. I think you're easy yourself. You're pretty good, pretty much a combination of both. And I think, you know, a lot of people can attest to that, but also look up to you for that as well. But yeah, man, I think with that being said, you know, looking at different projects in this space, and you're coming out with Bodega Buddies as well. We had recently Lily and the Lotus as well. So you made a tweet regarding, you know, dilution isn't a bad thing every time. You know, what are your thoughts? Can you expand on that? You know, dilution on like expansion collections, because other, a lot of projects doing that now. You obviously see that with, you know, the Pilots Mint coming out with Tyos as well. So, you know, can you elaborate on that kind of that tweet that you made about, you know, dilution isn't a bad thing every time?
Yeah, it's going to sound crazy, but I don't think it is. Like, I looked at the Reddit drop. They put out like 500,000 NFTs, and the valuable ones sold for 10 grand. So like, dilution, I think, encourages adoption because you can get into an ecosystem and understand something for a fraction of the cost. And I always think back, like, this was something I would have gone to war at for like ever. If you asked me this question last month, even 2 months ago, I would have been like, no, supplies need to be lower. But if anything, it's like the rarer assets, much like we see from even sneakers, from cards like Magic the Gathering, Pokemon, collectibles in general, even like sports memorabilia. The more sought after stuff is like usually older or the original. And that same effect exists in collections. Like I think D-Gods will never get flipped by Utes ever, like personally, because the D-Gods are still the OG collection. Sure, some Utes may flip because they're rarer, but the overall collection is what's like I'm more interested in. And I don't think we ever see the most expensive D-God that I think it was Dylan's Turned Up Dill who sold that one, the double gold armor one, because that was like the most sought after D-God. And for me, that's something I don't think Utes will ever flip because D-Gods were the predecessors to it. So that's why I think dilution can continue to extend because it adds more people to an ecosystem, gets more people into a space, and the original assets still maintain price action. But you do still need net new participants, which I think Utes did a great example of because they got new people into the space from like the Ethereum side of things, and many of them stuck around, which I think is a big win. So even now, as we continue to get more of this adoption from like other blockchains, Polygon's, we're going to see millions of NFTs from Polygon. I'm talking millions. Like if Starbucks kicks off and does this, like I'm pretty sure it's going to be badges that you earn through the app that can be resold. And I think this part is speculation. I think you're going to be able to get some like rewards off of them. Like if you own a certain set of badges, you get discounts, like a 5% off for life on coffee if you own all six. And that in turn creates an economy that they can gain royalties from people reselling certain badges. So that's like another way for them to generate revenue that's completely collectible aspect. You know, like if you collect every holiday cup from one season for all of December, you get a 10% discount. That in itself is like a way to continue to drive interest. And from a collectible standpoint, continue to crush. So I'm like, this is a great way to drive this. And I think that that's another way to get new people in the ecosystem. And that's where dilution is kind of a thing of the past, in my opinion. But it's not, this is not saying like go out there, drop 100K collection at one soul. It's not going to sell out. But like GMers showed that this is possible too. They just dropped a 50K collection at 0.1 and did totally fine. And it created this massive ecosystem of people in all these sub DAOs and subgroups, and the rare assets sold well. We saw the same thing when Solsteds launched their citizens. They had 1 million NFTs loaded up into a variety of candy machines, and it just basically extended the ecosystem as a free mint for people to just buy. So like, I thought that was a pretty cool idea to show that like dilution, if done in the right way, is not a negative. And if anything, it opens up to more people to join an ecosystem and in general, more people to join the space.
Yeah, I think agree with you. I like, you know, when like projects expand the ecosystem, it allows people that, like myself, obviously, if you didn't get in early on, say D-Gods, for example, or even the Tyos as well with the pilots coming up, I feel that's a good way for those entering the ecosystem, allows for people to enter the ecosystem and be a part of the community. The only thing is, like, you know, obviously, people may say, oh, but the floor price may go down, the value may go down, but I think it's kind of drives the projects to themselves and the founders themselves to continuously, you know, bring value, continuously, you know, provide some sort of like, you know, incentive for holding and being part of the ecosystem. And it just allows people to just, you know, connect and, you know, be a part of the community. When, you know, obviously you saw Tyos, a really small collection size. And now this allows it to be like ever expanding, but also allows people, like the more people inside a project, I think it just drives the project forward, right? You saw that with, you can see that with Utes as well. Like the whole community in Utes is just basically, you know, leveraging, like expanding on top of the D-Gods community and like overlapping as well. But yeah, man, I like your take. I think, you know, dilution is not bad. But yeah, man, obviously, you know, with that being said, with the current collections coming out and current market trends, is there anything that you're currently looking at right now? Is there, obviously, everyone's looking at the Klenos Mint coming up as well. But what are the trends you're seeing now? And do you think Solana NFT could make a comeback with, say, Klenos and all that coming up?
I think Klenos will do well. There's a lot of the right people interested in that project. Right now, I've spent almost my entire day on Famous Fox's raffle site trying to figure out these raffles. And like, there's a meta here that's going on. Their volume's insane. Every single one of these is selling out. I've won 4 of my 87 entered raffles today, and I'm just looping it. Like, if I win a raffle, I'm basically relisting it. And you're getting like 110% upside, if not more, on those because you're winning for like half a soul and even selling it for 3.5 soul. Sure, it's $35, but I got the NFT for $5. So right there's a 700% gain, a 7x just by participating. And the same thing can be said, like if you start to break down where some of these assets are selling, like Utes are selling every day. There's one right now that's actually about to end. That'll go for 143 SOL for a floor Ute, which is 113. That's a 30 SOL gain. And like there's this spot right now with SOL so cheap that more people are willing to take a gamble for a few dollars on something that could potentially earn them way more. Like it's the cost of a lotto ticket, quite literally. And I think that's what's really interesting is like as SOL pumps, this will die out. And that's something that I'm like, okay, that's fair. So how do I try to time this and participate in a way that's net positive for me? I listed like four things that I won today already. And if all of those sell, I'm already in the green despite spending 50 SOL on raffles today. So it's just kind of this like loop I'm trying to figure out. I'm always looking at new things in the space, trying to figure out what's moving, what's happening. And that's really where I'm like most interested.
Bro, you better keep it quiet, bro. I've been on those raffles as well. I'm trying to win the raffles. I think the last week I've been doing the same and just jumping because I can see there's an opportunity there, as you said, with it, with SOL being so cheap. And, you know, I think, you know, there is a kind of like a play there to if you win a Ute or something, you can just like relist it and the floor price, like you pretty much getting like 115 SOL, whatever it is. So obviously it's hard. It can get really addictive, but there's a fun like balance when you go onto these.
There's also like math to be entered in it, bro. Yeah, like you can look at stuff like and figure that out, you know? So like diving into that piece of it, the percentages and like where you can make bets and stuff. That's what I'm also like interested in. Like I said it earlier, I'm a huge analytics nerd. So if I can figure out analytics and metrics, it's not 100%. This is gambling. Like understand you could literally, even if you have a 90% chance, you could still lose. You know what I mean? That's kind of the thing too. So just being understanding of what the risks are. The other thing too is like, I'm using this for content. I'm so excited to make this YouTube video because this has been just a heinous day and I've documented all of it. So I think it's going to make a really fun video for me to just edit and record and share what I thought about the whole process and like the pros and cons of it.
Love it, man. I think that's, I'll be looking forward to that. And yeah, man, I think there is math behind the raffles, but obviously it is kind of happening as well. Like you see guys that win it with just one ticket. But yeah, man, obviously guys, if you're just joining in, this is Dojo Spaces hosted by Cyber Samurai, myself, Shake and Dorian. If you haven't already, we are giving away two Cyber Samurai NFTs. Please go retweet the pin post at the top there for your chance to win those NFTs. But yeah, man, we're loving this episode with EZ. We're doing this weekly as well with like this valued members of our Cyber Samurai community. So if you want to join in the conversation, feel free to jump up or ask a question down at the bottom. But we have Bison up here. What's up, Bison? How you doing, buddy? And what's your question, bud?
Oh, I'm good. How are you, local? Just trying to figure out the raffles, because I've been looking at this too. EZ, it's so funny you say this, because I've been trying to figure out like if I should go shotgun spread on this or if I should just go like, you know, kind of medium entry on a few of them, or if I should just go balls to the wall on some of them. It's really interesting to figure out like what the ticket value is. Do you know the mechanic as far as like if they don't sell out on tickets, it still goes through, right?
Oh, it still goes through. And that's where I've hit most of mine. Okay. Are unsold out ones, because it only lets you buy a max of 20% of tickets per wallet. But the thing is, if the tickets don't sell out, you can still buy what would be 20% of the sold out. So I have a few of the ones I've won where I actually had like a 30 to 35% chance to win instead of 20. And that's where like there's certain opportunity. It's also like from a listing perspective, I've seen different dynamics on what sells out quicker versus what doesn't. And like, there's a balance, like what's too many tickets to sell versus what's too high of a price for too low tickets. And like there's kind of like finding that. And I've probably spent the last seven hours today playing around with this.
Yeah, dude, it is so much fun. I've actually, you know, I won one, but I've been very low entry into it. I've actually been more into the lending side of things. I just think this is like such a market where you can learn so many different ways to make plays that make sense. You know, I was more so on the way down, it made a lot of sense to be loaning out your NFTs and just like hedging in USD. I know Manny down there is like the king of this. Now I am funding loans because I see like there's a few NFTs that I know like in 14 days time or 7 days, depending on what the NFT is. It just makes a lot more sense to be funding them.
I would fund the shit out of every tube that's up to loan. Every single one. I would fund the ever living shit out of it right now.
Yep, that's I'm tubes and tios are pretty much like done. The two things I'm targeting right now. It's what I use my Ute money for. So I actually talked with Joe or Deuced about this yesterday on the show. It just makes so much more sense because now that we've kind of I don't want to call bottoms or anything like that. I've just seen too many people call for single digit soul that I'm sitting there like, you know, it feels like $11 feels like a pretty low going into the tens and stuff like that. Like that feels low enough that my downside risk is whatever. And my upside risk getting into some of these plays at a, you know, potentially 40 to 50% discount just makes sense. And if not, so be it. Like I just gained, you know, 5% interest from them paying it off. So kind of just makes sense. But dude, this, I need to get into raffles. I'm going to pick your brain about this. I'll see you in Miami. By the way, I don't know if anybody told you, I just got a message back from Dorian. It's going to be December 2nd for.
Yeah, Shake messaged me too. Okay. Yeah, so I got to figure that out. It's the same time as the Nifty event, so I'm hoping to hit both and make it happen.
Well, let's just, you know, we'll just party plan together. Yeah, exactly. That's how it works. I'm excited, bro. I'm so excited to meet up with you and then the rest of the No Fluff crew and all the Cyber Samurai. It's going to be fantastic. Dude, I'm so excited for IRL events.
Bro, they're a blast. Like, after going to Lisbon, I'm like, I want to participate in every single one, even though that marked the, like, basically the Pico top of the temp bowl that we were in. It was like the sentiment there was, excuse me, absolutely electric compared to what I was seeing on crypto Twitter. It was two polar opposite worlds. Like the positivity and happiness in Lisbon and the growth of Solana made me so confident that yeah, Sol's going to sell off hard as shit with this FTX news, but it's not going to go to zero because there was way too much going on. Like there was way too many positive catalysts in such a small window for me to ever be like, this is actually going to go to zero.
Love it, man. I think, you know, that's probably one thing that I probably haven't had the chance to obviously attend these in real life events and just like, you know, connect with and learn with people. But for those who are listening, if you want to jump up and ask any questions, feel free to do so. We have, you know, Easy up here at your disposal. Obviously, if you want to come up, feel free to jump up and request. But one thing I want to ask you, Easy, obviously on that point of you being at a breakpoint and learning all the great things that are happening in Solana, what's the one highlight or standout project or event that was happening that stood out to you and that made you really bullish on Solana?
Yeah, I gotta say Aurori and Star Atlas, despite Star Atlas getting the FTX hit. They had games at every single booth showing their gameplay, and it's so dope to just see that level of engagement. Cupcake Protocol's up there as well, just because every like select individuals, if you met them, you were able to actually tap their card and get an asset. Like, dude, I ended up with a handful of those sardines from Clanosaurus. Thank God, because those things are pumping. So I'm gassed. But I don't have any whitelist or allowlist, so I'm like totally fine having those and just kind of sitting on them. And it just made for like the entire trip. The trip was paid for it itself by that alone, you know, which is crazy to think about. By going there, I was able to get NFTs by only being able to be in person and have this inherent value add from it. So like that was sick. And like it was just a ton of fun meeting people. Fire Dancer by Jump, I'm wicked excited for. 1 million TPS will be unheard of, and that should help with any scalability and congestion issues once that goes live. So just really cool tech stuff going on. The Google Cloud node situation is something I'm excited for too, because now theoretically anybody could stand up a node at any point across any of Google's data centers, and that's a big win. Like, it's just all the infrastructure plays that a lot of people don't consider that actually is powering all this degeneracy we take part in. Made me so excited for the future because we're only improving. Backpack was there. That was sick. I saw the Saga Solana phone in person, did a quick tech review on it. Just really cool things like that that have me so excited. And being in one place where all of that is the focus was just an absolute win.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's probably something that people don't really get to see or see the behind the scenes. And I think, you know, only attending these events will allow you to see all these things. And obviously you mentioned that, you know, crypto Twitter was so much different to how it was in real life. And I think, you know, Solana is pretty, like, based on what you're saying, I feel like, you know, Solana still is really one of the top blockchains out there, and the protocols that we have. And yeah, I think I'm pretty excited for Backpack as well. I think, you know, being able to have your ETH and Solana wallet in the same, pretty much the same wallet, being able to transfer, I think it allows you to transfer these funds directly on within the same wallet. I think that's a pretty cool way to go about it. And yeah, man, I think that's exciting to hear. Like, you know, there's so much happening with Solana. I think the Google thing was pretty good as well. But yeah, we saw that did you? We saw that. You know, that was pretty much the top for the for this kind of like cycle that we had, and then now we're going down a downtrend. But yeah, as you said, a lot of people are calling for single digit SOL, but I don't think that's coming in real soon with everything that you're saying. That's quite bullish. Yeah,
100%, man. And it's just been great to be a part of this as well. So I appreciate you guys having me. It's been an awesome conversation. Appreciate all the questions and taking the time with the dojo today.
Love it, man. So last thing. Anything you want to say coming up, or anything you want to lasting words for those who are listening, and I'm gonna, if it's some valuable takeaway points.
Yeah, man, it's a game of survival right now in this downtrend. So if you can survive the bear, you thrash in the bull, you flourish in the bull, and that's really as honest and as blunt as it can be. If you can survive this and find an opportunity to do something that you enjoy, run with it, double down on it, find exactly why you're in the space, focus on that why, and just keep showing up every day, and you're gonna reap the benefits once this market turns.
There you go, guys. Obviously, Easy's dropping some great alpha and great points for those who are listening. I think this is probably where we're gonna wrap it up now. Obviously, thank you so much for your time, Easy. Taking time out of your day to join us here on the dojo. Obviously, this is a cyber samurai community sort of spaces, but we value anyone that wants to come and chat with us. I think this also is going up on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We are creating content for that as well, so stay tuned for that for this episode to be uploaded there as well. I think next week we may have a big person on as well, who can't wait to share that one with you. But again, thanks Easy, thanks Shake, Dorian, Bison, anyone that jumped up and spoke today. We really value all of you guys. Yeah, man, I think we'll wrap it up there, and we'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Dojo. This episode was brought to you by Cyber Samurai NFT. Please, it would mean the world to us if you could subscribe and leave us a like and review on all streaming platforms, as it would help us reach a wider audience, including people like yourselves, and help us onboard others into Web3.